When Mark Antony beseeched his Roman friends and countrymen to lend him their ears, when Julia Ward Howe wrote of the glory that her eyes had seen, they were invoking organs that we often endow with dignity or sensuousness or even mystery. But try these. The nostrils are the basement windows of the soul. Or, drink to me only with thy nose. They just don't work. The great protuberance through which we smell is a common subject of humor and derision, and now of a book by Gabriel Glaser. It's called The Nose, A Profile of Sex, Beauty, and Survival. The author says that she has been interested in the aesthetics and the science of noses ever since she grew up looking out from behind an unusual one at a town full of small, turned-up Scandinavian noses.
I grew up in a little tiny town in Oregon, and I had a very unusual nose. I had a nose that looked different from everybody else's. I have one grandparent who was Jewish, another grandparent who was a Native American, great-great-grandparents, far up the train. And I just looked different. I looked, you know, very, very different from everybody else. And so that set me apart right away. And secondly, I had a really unusually acute sense of smell. And I was really kind of a bloodhound in my own family.
So you said about researching the nose as it figures in history and in religious texts and ancient civilizations. I guess one thing that was quite interesting in your book about this is that until relatively recently, for someone to say, I'm studying smell, I'm studying olfaction, was a sign perhaps of eccentricity or at least irrelevancy.
Exactly. People just discarded the nose as a primal organ that we had really no need for. Even as recently as the 1950s, there were some textbooks, medical textbooks, which referred to the nose as a vestigial organ. Or not the nose itself, obviously, but the sense of olfaction, our ability to smell. And when researchers started rediscovering the importance of the nose and the actual cells at the top of the nose that are connected to the brain, that's the only brain, those are the only brain cells which are actually in contact with the outside world, they started thinking, you know, maybe there's something here. Maybe we ought to look at this in order to give us more clues about how the brain works.
I guess one theory that's cited a few times is that when humans or when any creatures are close to the ground, and in our case that would be living on all fours, we're smelling a lot more than when we rise up and stand up on our legs. As bipeds, sight becomes much more important than smell.
Exactly. That was a theory that Freud had and certainly others had, and that, you know, it was very inelegant to use your sense of smell, to use your nose for anything other than just, you know, blowing it. And your sight and your hearing were far more important to your ability to reason.
And you've come up with some really fascinating stuff about medicine as recently as the 1940s, the early 1950s, when the approach to nasal maladies was, to put it mildly, it was Victorian. I mean, explain a bit here. What happened, say, if a woman had sinusitis and went to see her doctor?
Well, if she went to see her doctor, in this case at Cornell Hospital in New York in the 1940s, a group of neurosurgeons and, you know, it's actually unclear what the other doctors were, but for sure, two neurologists and a medical researcher would enroll these women in studies. And they would give them something called sodium amytal, which is known as a truth serum used in hypnosis and in some kind of older psychotherapeutic treatments to try to get people to talk about their feelings. So they would analyze these women and they would look at their nasal symptoms. They would ask them to go back and describe their nasal symptoms over their lifetimes. And they would align them, the doctors would align the nasal symptoms with emotional ups and downs. Father dies, bad cold, aha, there it is. Stress is causing these crazy nasal symptoms. And they also tied them to all these, you know, really weird sexual subversions, too much sex, not enough sex, masturbation, all sorts of things.
Yeah, you quote the titles of some case studies. I have your book open to the appropriate page. in the 1950 book The Nose, an experimental study of reactions within the nose in human subjects during various life experiences. And the titles of the articles are just, they're astonishing. Vasomotor rhinitis and sneezing in dissatisfied, frustrated, resentful, weepy woman.
Yeah, well, that's a kind of adjectival description indeed. Yeah, another one, vasomotor rhinitis in anxious, dissatisfied, resentful woman who based her security on her good looks and sexual assets and who feared she was losing both.
And that was the, excuse me.
Can you imagine running across that? You go to a doctor and you happen to see your chart. That would certainly not be.
But this is, these were women who came with some kind of nose complaint to their doctor, and they get their sex life gets analyzed. Yes.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because they based their theories on these Victorian notions that all of your, it's a psychosomatic illness, and there is some truth to it. Actually, doctors believed that your nose was a very sexual organ, and that it swelled much like genitalia during sexual excitement. So they would literally, you know, peer into these women's noses with their speculum and look and see, aha, you know, if she's describing her sex life with her husband while she's on this sodium amytal and her nose is swelling, it must be because she's sexually excited.
Is it a lot better now? I mean, if you have some complaint with your nose and you go to see your doctor, has the science of the nose improved a good deal?
No, I have to say it really hasn't. That was another thing that led me to writing this book, because I myself have sinus problems. I've had 4 sinus surgeries, and chronic sinusitis is the most common long-term disease in the United States. More healthcare dollars are spent trying to cure this chronic disease than almost any other illness. And doctors have surgery, they have antibiotics. Walk down the aisle of any CVS or Rite Aid in this country, and what do you see? An entire huge aisle for nasal symptoms. And none of the treatments we have today, heretofore, are really useful in helping people get better.
Did you, after this entire project, end up admiring any particular kind of nose, or did it all leave you in a very democratic spirit of, you know, every nose has its own virtue?
Well, every nose does have its own virtue, of course. But I have to say, I've always been really fond of the large Greek noses that Roman and Greek statues had. Those are really, the Michelangelo's David, that's just the best. And Elvis's nose, he had a beautiful nose.
Well, Gabrielle Glaser, thank you very much for talking with us about noses today.
Thank you very much.
Gabrielle Glaser is the author of The Nose, A Profile of Sex, Beauty, and Survival.
Nose job.
Now she's the prettiest gal in town.
Nose job.
Now she's the prettiest gal in town.
She got a nose job. She got a nose.